Bibles, please turn to the book of Proverbs, chapter 24. Proverbs, chapter 24. We'll read verses 13 through 17 together. Proverbs, chapter 24, verses 13 through 17. We will read this passage responsively. My son, eat thou honey because it is good, and the honeycomb which is sweet to thy taste. So shall the knowledge of wisdom be unto thy soul. When thou hast found it, then there shall be a reward, and thy expectation shall not be cut off. Lay not wait, O wicked man, against the dwelling of the righteous. Spoil not his resting place. For a just man falleth seven times, and riseth up again, but the wicked shall fall into mischief. And let's read verse 17 together. Ready? Rejoice not when thine enemy falleth, and let not thine heart be glad when he stumbleth. And let's pray. Father, thank you so much. Father, this morning, as our preacher preached, the aisles were flooded with people, folks that needed saved, and lives that needed changed, and people that were obedient in baptism. And yet, Father, we're still a needy people. Father, sometimes we look at our lives and think that we have it all together, and then we open up the Word of God or hear it preached and realize we have so far yet to go. Father, please instruct us tonight. Work through our preacher. Speak through him. Change our lives, please. May we be a little bit more like you and a whole lot less like ourselves. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated.
I announced that this evening I would preach a sermon called How to Deal with So-Called Failures. Let me tell you why the title calls them so-called failures. I don't think anything or anybody is a permanent failure until they fall down and don't get up. And I think if you fall down and you get back up, I think that is a kind of a failure, but not totally. I think if you get back up and if you make something out of yourself after you failed, it may not do away with that stumble or that fall, but it sure does dilute it or make it a lot smaller, in my opinion. And so I call it How to Deal with So-Called Failures. In the passage of Scripture that we read, you see one verse, and I'm going to use this mic if I can. Proverbs chapter 24, verse 16 says, "For a just man falleth seven times and riseth up again." For a just man falleth seven times and riseth up again. I looked that word just up, and what it means is a man that wants to do right. A man that wants to do right, he'll fall seven times, and he rises up again. In other words, he falls down seven times. But every time he falls down, he gets up. So a man is walking in life and he stumbles. But he doesn't stay down. He gets up. And he walks a little further in life and then he stumbles again the second time. But he gets back up. And he stumbles again. And he gets back up. And he stumbles a fourth time, but he gets back up. And he stumbles a fifth time, but he gets back up. And he stumbles a sixth time, and he gets back up. And he stumbles a seventh time, and he gets back up. Now, somebody watching may say, look at that dummy. Well, I don't think he's a dummy. He keeps getting back up. He keeps getting back up. What this verse means is, for every fall down, there's a get up. And that's what you need to do in your life. For every fall down, just have a get up. That's what will turn you into a good Christian. For every fall down, have a get up. So this man fell seven times, but got up each time. Someone said, you learn from your mistakes. If that is true, I am going to be brilliant. I've made all sorts of mistakes. I'm going to share some of my failures with you tonight. Mrs. Owens, if this gets too short, you let me know and she can help me with some of these. You've heard a couple of these stories before, but I can remember my grandpa had given us some walnuts. The walnuts still had that green green shell on the outside of it. How many of you know what I'm talking about? A walnut with a green shell on the outside. And I'd ask him, said, Grandpa, how do you get that green shell off? Well, he gave me a couple of ways to do it. One was, you take a drill, you drill a hole in a 2x4 that's smaller than that green shell, and then you can put that walnut on that over that hole, and then take a hammer and slam it through there, and that hole will just skin the shell right off, and you'll have nothing but the nut left. But that takes too long, in my opinion. I'm in a hurry. I am in a hurry to get things done. Another way, he said, was you can take those walnuts and throw them on the driveway and then just drive your car over the top of them. You'll smash that green shell off. Now, I could do a bunch of those really fast, and that's how I like to do it. And so I took a bunch of walnuts. I threw them all over the driveway. I'm as proud of myself. I'm about to get my wife all sorts of fresh walnuts so she can make me banana nut bread. And I'm out there. I got them all over the place. And our driveway, right beside the drive, there were two trees. And I started the car up. I put it in reverse. You know, I got to wondering, am I hitting any of those walnuts? So I thought the best thing to do is to hold the door open. So I popped the door open. I was driving with my right hand, had my left hand holding the door open. I'm looking back there, and I thought, well, this is good. I'm hitting those walnuts. So I backed up a little bit, and then I drove forward, and you can hear them crunching and see little green things falling off those things, and I was so proud of myself, so I thought, I better speed up the process a little bit, so I did. This time I went back real fast and real hard, and there's a tree right here. My door was hanging out, and I went back so far that tree caught my open door, and before I knew it, I had bent my door, so my door was touching the front fender. I fell down. I felt that is the dumbest thing. I mean, I'm not exaggerating. It was touching the front fender, and there was no closing it. When I took it into the Ford dealership to have it fixed, they said, "What happened to this?" I said, "Well, my wife, you know how they are." Oh, and about to admit to what I had done. They had to fix that stupid door. I had to drive through town with that door wide open. Stupid, stupid. Let me tell you how I take shells off of walnuts. I drill a hole in a board. I take a hammer and I knock them through that hole. It's the safest way. Do you know it cost me $620 to get the shells off of that first batch of walnuts? That's expensive banana nut bread. I remember years and years ago, I had known since I was a 16-year-old boy that one day I would pastor a New Testament church. I knew that's what God wanted me to do. I was working for Brother Hiles in Hammond, and a big church down in Atlanta, Georgia called me, and I thought maybe it was time. I thought maybe it's time for me to go to become a pastor, and I went down and visited, and they wanted us to come. They had asked us to come. I took my wife and my kids, and we'd gone down and spent days there and preached for them, and I was to give them an answer about coming. And, well, I got this idea. I thought, well, I wasn't, you know, I was just a little scared about the whole thing. And I thought, well, what we'll do is we'll put our house up for sale, and we'll see if our house sells. And if it does, maybe that'll be a sign. Now, I'm not much, those kind of signs aren't real smart because, you know, the devil can sell houses just like the Lord could sell a house. And I said, well, we'll put our house up for sale. So we did. Put it up for sale that morning at about 7:30 in the morning. We started passing word around. By 3 o'clock that very afternoon, our house was sold for the exact amount I wanted. People said, give you exactly what you want. Won't bicker with you at all. It's sold. I said, wow, fantastic. Hey, well, all right. So we went to church the next Sunday. Brother Hiles got up to preach. That night after church, I was supposed to call that church down in Georgia and tell them if I would either accept or reject their offer to become their pastor. Well, we went to church that night. Now, Brother Hiles, when he was getting into his latter years, he had virtually worked himself sick, and he every once in a while, his mind would just shut down for a little while. And he just couldn't think straight. Now, some of you say, well, I'm not in my latter years, and that happens to me already. But he couldn't remember for just a little while. He'd repeat himself a little bit. And that night, He was preaching along, and in the service, he started repeating himself. He repeated a statement once, and then repeated a statement twice, and then repeated that statement a third time. And he didn't really completely finish his sermon that night. Everybody in the church was just in awe over it. They just sat back and said, oh no, the preacher's not well. And we knew he didn't have many years and that he'd go on to be with the Lord, but this was, it affected us. Well, I was sitting in my pew. I knew that I was trying to make a decision about going down to that church in Atlanta, Georgia, and becoming the pastor. But as I sat there that night, I watched my preacher, I seen his health, and the Lord has never spoken to me with an audible voice, but I think he spoke to my heart that night, and the Lord said, Jeff, you don't want to leave the preacher while he's not well. And that night, the Lord said, Jeff, why don't you just make a commitment to stay with your preacher to either the time when you go to heaven or when he goes to heaven, you just stick with him all the way to the end. And I made that decision that night. Well, that church was over with. We got in the car. We started to head home. And my wife, I was supposed to be going home to call these people to tell them that I was going to take that church. So we're on our way home, and I said, honey, I want to tell you about a decision that I made tonight. I had gone to the altar. I made the decision. I'd not discussed it with her. But I went to the altar and I said, Lord, I'm not going to take that church. And Lord, I'm going to stay with Brother Hiles until the day he passes away. I'm going to make sure of that. Well, we're on our way home, driving home after church. I said, honey, I want to tell you about a decision that I made tonight. She said, what's that, honey? I said, it's about that church down in Georgia. She said, oh, what is it? I said, I'm not going to go. She said, you're not going to go? I said, no, we're not going to go. I said, we're going to stay right here. She said, that's fine. We drove for about 30 more seconds, and she turned to me and she said, you sold our house! Yeah. Yeah, I did. I suppose you want to talk about it, right? You sold our house! I had. You say, what did you do? We sold the house. We had promised someone. We decided that they could have the house. We'd already taken a down payment. And to be very honest with you, I'm a man of my word. If I tell you I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. And so, now, I did go out and I told her. I said, honey, I'm going to get you a nicer house. I think we spent about $25,000 more than what our house had sold for. You say, why? I sold the woman's house out from under. It's better than living in hell. $25,000 ain't nothing compared to what I was going to go through unless I got things straightened out the right way. Mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy. I know what I'm talking about. That was a well-invested 25 grand. Well, what a dumb thing to do. Again, I failed. I failed. Now, I doubt that there's any man in here that sold your wife's house when you weren't supposed to. It doesn't usually happen. I was taking a test in Bible college. And it was in a class called Daniel and Revelation. It was a prophecy class. And I'd kind of studied for this great big test over Daniel and Revelation. I thought I'd memorized enough. You know how when you don't really study, but you memorize thinking you're going to make it through? I figured I'd memorized just enough to pass the test. I walked in. The teacher didn't even show up for the class. The teacher sent his secretary, and she didn't have any papers or anything with her. I thought, we're supposed to be taking a test. And I was a very good student. I think I graduated Sigma Cum Laude. Is that how you say it? Summa cum laude, whichever it is. I graduated one of those. And I remember I was sitting there and I was watching, and she wrote, she said, I'm going to put your test on the board. And she got a piece of chalk and she wrote on the board, write down everything you know about the books of Daniel and Revelation, period. She said, pull out your paper and you may begin. Write down everything you know about the books of Daniel and Revelation. I thought it would be one of those true-false deals where if you put a little cross on your T that makes it look like an F, you can fool them. And, you know, you get a system, T-T-F-T-T-F-T-T-F-T-T-F. I thought, you know, I can pull one off here. Well, everybody in the class went, I mean, there's people sweating, and I mean, it was terrible. When we got done, the truth is, people were faking it, how long it took them. They sat there for a long time doing nothing because they didn't want to admit they filled up a half a page, and that's all they knew to say. Well, when we got our test back, the teacher said this. He said, I've graded your test, and he said, what I have done is I have in red ink circled everything that's wrong with your test. I got mine back. There was a big red circle around the whole page. I couldn't believe it. That's my worst failure at taking a test in college. I tore the car door off. I sold our house without my wife really knowing what was going on and how we did it all. I failed that test. I remember at one point in my life when I was in my late teenage years, I'd gotten backslidden, gotten away from God. And I remember how I didn't want to go to church. I didn't want to be around church people. I wasn't interested in the things of God. I remember how miserable I felt. I remember once when I was asked to, we had some choir notebooks, and they wanted me to make some labels that said choir notebook on it. Well, the choir director said, I want you to put choir notebook on these. He said, let me get a piece of paper and I'll spell that out for you. And I thought, okay, you don't need to spell that for me. I know how to spell it. And so, you remember those little devices that used to have a little dial on the top and it had little tape in it? You twist the dial to the letter that you want and then you squeeze it and it indents on that little like piece of plastic stuff, the letter. Then you can pull the sticky stuff off the back and you slap it on there. Well, I was going to label 40 choir notebooks, and I did. The only problem was I spelled choir wrong. I switched the I and the O. Now, phonetically, you don't spell choir the way it looks. I thought I had that thing figured out. I was so embarrassed. I ruined every one of those notebooks. I have watched myself make some of the dumbest mistakes. I have failed over and over and over again in life. I got to tell you about one of Brother Nash's failures. His are even dumber than mine. When somebody told me this story, I didn't think it was true. I had to ask him if this really happened because I thought, oh, no, nobody'd do that. And so I asked him the other day, I said, Brother Nash, is this a true story? He said, yeah. Somebody came to me and said, did you hear? He said, Brother Nash pulled in one day at the gas station. I don't know if he had somebody with him or not, but it sounded like there was somebody riding with him. He pulled into the gas station, and he was in a hurry. So he went back, and he flipped that little cap, and then he twisted off the cap, and he got the nozzle off the gas pump, and he stuck it in there and squeezed the trigger and put it on hold, and it was pumping gas going right away, and everything was going just super. Ran in, paid for it, ran back out, jumped in his car, and took off. The only problem was there was a part of the process that had not been completed, and that was pulling the nozzle out of the car. He said he got just to the outside where he's about to pull on the road. He looked back and his car suddenly had a tail. Now, he knew that his car didn't have a tail when he pulled in there, and he figured that something was going on. Evolution was taking place. His car was turning into a monkey. He seen that old tail flipping back there, and there was gasoline coming out of the pump. And evidently, when he pulled out, he forgot to pull the nozzle out of the car, and he yanked that nozzle right off the gas pump and was driving up the road with it. So what do? Well, you got to give them back their hose. He said he went out there, and he grabbed it and put the lid back on and, just tried to redo the process. It's too late. He said he walked in and laid it down on the counter and said, I believe this is yours. That's what I said. See, I'm not lying. I'm telling the truth right now. Hey, listen, folks, we're not going to get out of this thing without making some mistakes. We're going to fail. We're going to fail and fail and fail and fail and fail and fail. But let me tell you something. If every time you fail, you get up and fail, you get up and fail, you get up and fail, you get up, every one of those failures can become worthwhile. I'm not condoning the failure. I'm condoning the get up after the failure. The Bible says a just man falleth 7 times, and then he riseth up again. Now, I have made a lot of mistakes in my life, and I'm not finished yet. If when this church called me as pastor, you thought you were calling someone that's perfect, I'm sorry, I'm not. And I'm going to make some more mistakes. Everybody's going to make mistakes. Sincerely, I don't want to make any mistakes, but I'm going to do it. But I want to very quickly, I want to tell you some things that I do to help myself, some things that I believe that helps me to get back up after a fall down. How do you get back up, Brother Owen, when you fall down? And these are some personal observations. These are some things that I do. I sat down and said, now, Jeff Owens, how is it that you get back up after you've fallen down? And I wrote those things down, and I'm going to teach you how I get me back up after I have caused me to fall down. First of all, to me, a failure is merely a lesson I have learned about how not to do it. A failure to me is a lesson I have learned about how not to succeed. So you see, every failure for me gets me one step closer to success. You see, each time I fall down, I've learned another way not to do it, and so I get back up and I don't make that same mistake again, and I'm closer to success. If I fail 99 times, I have found 99 ways that do not work. Now, sooner or later, I'm going to find the way that works. Now, this is one of the things I've trained myself to do. Because if you don't train yourself to get up after a fall down, one of these days you're going to fall down and you're going to stay down. And I don't want to stay down. I want to get up and stay up. I want to keep on moving for God. Failure is one of the ingredients of success. If you add failure to failure to failure to failure to failure to failure to failure, eventually you're going to have success. Well, Robert Owens, I thought success plus success plus success plus success equals success. Oh no, failure plus failure plus failure plus failure plus failure plus failure equals success. That's how you build a business. You go out and you fail at it and you learn something that you shouldn't do. Then you fail at something else and you learn something you shouldn't do. And before long, you'll know what does not work, and by process of elimination, you'll learn what does work, and some of you are on the brink of success. Don't stay down. A just man falleth seven times and he riseth up again. Abraham Lincoln was a failure. Listen to this. He was a clerk at a store when he was a young man, and that store went broke. He bought a partnership in another store and it failed in 2 months. He ran for legislature and he got beat. He ran for Senate, and he got beat. He ran for the Senate again, and he got beat. He ran for the seat of Vice President, and he got beat. You know what happened next? He ran for the President of the United States and became the 16th President of the United States, one of the most successful presidents in the history of this great country. Now, let me tell you how he got there. He fell down, and he got up. And 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 he became a success. Now, how in the world, Brother Owens, do you cope with your failures? When I fail, I realize I figured out another way not to do it. Secondly, I've learned that life is a series of failures. Life is a series of failures. For instance, riding a bicycle. Do you know how you learn to ride a bike? You first learn how to crash a bike. Everybody here that ever learned how to ride a bike, learn how to skin up your shins. Shin skinning's a part of the learning how to ride bike process. Anybody that ever learned how to ride a bike, learn that you're going to fall, and you're going to crash, and you're going to get banged up and bumped up, but then all of a sudden, one day, after you rode and fell and got up, and rode and fell and got up, and rode and fell and got up, and rode and fell and got up, one day you rode off into the wild blue yonder, and once you learn how to ride one, never forget. Now, you don't look the same later on riding it as you did at first, but you learn how. That's how you learn to ride a bike, and that is how you'll learn life. You see, for me, I've learned something. Life is a series of failures. It's like walking. Everybody here, when you learn to walk, You know what you did? It was a series of failures. Your mom, you held her finger, you took one step, and you crashed, and you cried. And then, again, mom stood you up, and you took one step, and then you crashed again. And they got you back up again. Next time, you took two steps, and they thought that they had won the lottery. Yay, Joey, two steps. Now, if your mom's still saying that, and you're 30, we've got problems. Next time, they got you up, and you, one, two, three. And then you fell again, and everybody cheered. And this is how you learn to walk. Took a step, and you fell, and you got up. And then you took two steps, and you fell, and you got up. Then you took three steps, and you fell, and you got up. And that is exactly how I keep on going. I have learned that life is a series of failures. After you fail enough, eventually you're going to succeed. It's like the tide coming in, the ocean. It comes in, but doesn't quite make it. And it goes back out. It comes in a little further, and doesn't quite make it. And then it goes back out. It comes in a little further, and it doesn't quite make it. And it goes back out. It comes in a little further, and doesn't quite make it. And it goes back out. And eventually, it comes all the way in, and it succeeded. But it failed, and 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 then it succeeded. A just man falleth seven times, then riseth up again. And to me, a failure is just another lesson that I've learned how not to do it. To me, life is a series of failures. The Christian life is much the same. That's what it's all about. Number three, to deal with failures, I realize that what has already happened or what's already occurred, I can't change it. You've heard the old saying, don't cry over spilled milk. Now, a lot of you are wasting a lot of success time crying about past failures. Once I have failed, I am not minimizing the fact that I've failed, but I am maximizing the fact that I'm going to go on and I'm going to spend all my time worrying about what's already passed and what's already occurred. Don't cry over spilled milk. We spend way too much time grieving over our failures. Don't spend all your time grieving over your failure. The devil not only gets the victory for your failure, he then, because of all the time you take after it grieving, he then gets a victory because you waste so much time in self-pity over the failure. So in a way, if you're not careful, you will fail and then grieve about that failure to the point of failing again. Now, if I fail, the last thing I'm going to do is give old Smutty Face a chance to get the victory on me. If I fail, I'm going to get back up, put my gloves back on, and say, let's go another round, bud. Come on. Come on. Come get a piece of this. Let's go. Let's go again. But here's what some of you do. He hits you, and you lay there. Oh, honey. That's where some of you adults are right now. Oh, life's been so hard. Oh, shut up. Get up and do something with your life. Everybody goes through failure, but some of you fail and you just lie there. You just wallow in self-pity and grief and, oh, I fail, I feel so bad. Boy, I wouldn't want to live my life that way. See, when I fail, and I do, I realize, all right, I failed. I'm going to get back up. I've got to get back up. I am not going to spend all my time grieving over something that I cannot change. Most of us are more worried about the embarrassment from our failure than our growth as a result of our failure. Let me go on. Number four. To deal with failures, I learn a lesson from my failure and decide not to fail at that particular thing in that particular way again. See, to deal with my failures, I say, all right, it happened once, but it's not happening again. All right, I did that. I'm guilty. I failed. I get myself up and I say, I may fail in some other area, but in that area, we're not going back there again. We're not going back there again. I don't think it's a terrible thing to fail at something at which you've never attempted or never been trained to do. I do think it's a terrible thing to fail at it over and over and over and over again. Repetitive failure in the same area means somebody's lazy, somebody's not learning their lessons, somebody's not getting the wisdom of God in their life. I think you're a failure if you make the mistake over and over and over again. I think you fall and you make a mistake. I think that's one thing. If you get back up and now you make the best out of that thing, I think that's what you're supposed to do. But I think when you fall and then the next thing you know, you trip at the same place over the same thing again and again and again. Now, you are almost to the point of being a failure. I don't want anybody to be a permanent failure. Brother Bajent, I have never again crushed walnuts with my door open. I learned my lesson. I don't crush walnuts with the door open anymore. Hey, Brother Nash, have you ever again drove off at the gas station with the hose still in the tank? You see, he learned his lesson. Well, let me ask you, how many times you fail at the same thing? And see, what I do is when failure comes my way, I say, all right, Jeff, learn your lesson. Let's make it once and for all. Let's never make that mistake again. I worked as the vice president in Hiles Anderson College. Dr. Wendell Evans said this to me. He said, the one thing I like about you is everybody knows if you make a mistake, you make it once. He said, I am very confident having this college in your control because I know that if there is a mistake made, it'll be made one time, and the next time, that'll become your strength. It'll no longer be a weakness for you. Now, some of you have your life in a mess. I'll tell you why. You fell down, and at the very same spot, you fell again. And then at the very same spot, you fell again. Now, get it together. If you're going to fail at something, fail at it. That's fine. Get back up. But why do we want to repeatedly fail at the same things? Number next, I let my failures remind me of how desperately I need God's power and guidance. Failure is good in one aspect. Why? Well, you turn and say, boy, do I need God. Here I am again. Got myself in a mess again. Falling into sin again. Your failures will remind you of His holiness. Your failures will remind you you need God. And let me tell you this also. You be careful how you treat people that fail or fall. Because you may be next. You say, well, I would never do what she did. Oh, yes, you would. You better remember there is a merciful God and a gracious God. And if it were not for that God, we would all be in a real pickle. But He has been kind and gracious to all of us. So, I let my failures remind me of how desperately I need Him. We get pretty cocky and arrogant sometimes about our Christian life. We can think, you know, I've got it down. I know exactly what to do. I've got it all down. Hey, preacher may get up there and preach against thus and so sin, and that's never going to affect me. About that time, you're getting ready to go down. Because pride goeth before destruction, and a haughty spirit before a fall. You better just watch ever saying, well, I would never. That is so disgusting. We're all disgusting. We all have the potential of committing any sin that anybody else has committed. And when I fall, I just turn and say, boy, is He holy. Boy, do I need Him. My failures help me to be reminded of how holy He is and how desperate I am of His guidance. Here's something else I do. Immediately following a failure, I try to schedule myself to be busy attempting to succeed at something. You see, if all you, after a failure, all you do is sit around and whine about it, you have so much think time, you'll have yourself depressed. People say, Brother Owens, you're busy. You're right. Because every time I fail, I've got to schedule something quickly to go succeed to keep my spirit up. But a lot of people, they'll fail. They'll take weeks. They won't do anything. I'm going to quit my Sunday school class. I'm going to quit my bus route. I'm going to quit my wife. I'm going to quit my husband. I'm going to quit everything. I'm just a quitter. Everything's going bad for me. I don't have time for that. Because if I fail, I go find something to succeed at to get my spirit back up because I don't want to be a quitter.
If I fall down, I'm going to get up, and I better find something quickly to do with my life, or I'm going to get down and depressed. The minute you fail at something, go find something to do that you succeed at. And you'll find yourself encouraged again. I was asked to preach at a conference. They were having a couple of meetings. They had a teenage girls meeting. And they said, Brother Owens, we want you to come and preach to all these teenage girls. Now, I don't mind preaching to women, but it's hard for me. Because men and women, they don't think alike. One of the two don't think at all, in my opinion. And that's a problem right there. You have to pick which. Amen? Women should keep silence in the church. Well, I'm not. I went in there and I preached to those girls, and I'm telling you, the closest I've ever been to being a woman with them, I think I laid an egg. I think I preached crummy. I mean, I'd preach something, and I'd look out there, and they're all just kind of staring at me, and I'm thinking, are you getting it? And their eyes were crossed and things, and I couldn't figure it out. I walked away. I fell about knee-high to a grasshopper. I walked away thinking, oh, boy, that was rotten. Thank God. I got in my car, and I had to drive to the other half of the conference. Then I went, and I preached about 600 preachers. Now, then we could get with it. I went from what I felt was a failure to an immediate way of success, and it got me encouraged again. It didn't ruin my day. And when you fail at something, don't just lay there and roll around in your self-pity. Go find something and succeed. Go find somebody and win them to Jesus Christ. Go do something that you can do to succeed. Let me move on quickly. When I fail, I ask God to forgive me of my failures. Then I accept His forgiveness. When I fail, I ask God to forgive me for my failure, then I immediately accept His forgiveness. You see, I by faith claim that forgiveness and go on for God. I think if there's anything that's kept me on top in the ministry, it is this. I believe in the forgiveness of God. I believe in it. I believe it when He said, you ask for forgiveness, you get forgiveness. So every time I fail, I run to God, and I say, Lord, I've goofed up again. I've sinned, and I'm sorry. And at that very moment, I believe He forgives me, and I walk away, and I go do something for God. A lot of people hang on to it, and hang on to it, and hang on to it, and hang on to it. Do you know that you only need to go to Him one time sincerely to ask forgiveness of a particular sin, and He forgives you of it? But here's some of you. You can say, oh, God, I did this. Forgive me. The next day, oh, God, I did this. Forgive me. And He's saying, didn't I forgive you that yesterday? What are you coming back for? The next day, oh, God, I still did this. Forgive me. He said, what are you talking about? You see, He said, the moment you ask me to forgive, I forgot. I put it as far as the east is from the west. I put it behind my back. I put it in the deepest sea. I have amnesia. I remember it no more. And you go back 10 times in a row and you say, oh, God, forgive me. And He says, forgive you for what? You're already forgiven for that. Now quit whining about it. Quit laying there in your self-pity and get out there and do something with your life. I'm not saying I abuse the forgiveness of God. I don't go out and sin just to see if He'll forgive me. But when I do sin, I go to Him, I say I'm sorry, I get up, and I hit it running. And I just decide, you know what, I think He forgave me. And the devil says, you better be careful going full blast like that right after you goofed up. And I say, I'm going full blast. You just watch what happens. The devil can't stop me. I've got forgiveness. You can't stop me. I'm going to do something for God. And that's exactly what I do. And it works. It works. Go do something for God. Some of you have carried that sin for years and years and years, and it is holding you back, and you're not getting anywhere. You've fallen down, but you've not totally gotten up because you don't claim the forgiveness that He promised. I believe when He says He forgives. I'm almost finished here. Next, I teach people using my failures. If I fail at something, I think I'll teach people what I learned from my failures. People love it when I tell about my goof-ups. Y'all just loved it, sitting there just waiting. What's the next story? What's the next stupid thing that he did? I'm going to teach it. The devil might have said, I'm going to destroy you with that. I'm going to turn around and use it on him. I might have made a mistake, but I'm not going to spend all my time whining about it. I'll turn that thing around. I'll go teach people how they don't have to make the same mistake. For instance, folks, if ever you're trying to take the green hull off the outside of a walnut, don't do it near trees if you're going to run over it with your car. I just saved you over $600 in repairs in the Ford company. Learn. Brother Hiles told the story about how he was going to be the general contractor for a church building that was building, a beautiful building. And he was going to save money. So he was a general contractor. He overseen it all. They drew up the plans. They got it completely finished. Thousands of people came from everywhere. The mayor was there. People from the town council were there. And they were having the big dedication service. So they were standing up front. There he was, this great big beautiful new building. They were getting ready to cut the ribbon. And one of the councilmen turned to him and said very quietly, he said, this is a beautiful building. What kind of heat do you have? Brother Hiles said, heat. I knew I forgot something. He had built a brand new building and put no heat in it at all. He said inside this beautiful building, they had to put ductwork that you could see. He said it was terrible. He told that story. Every time he told that story, Brother Young, I said, good, there's hope for me. I was with Brother Young. A pastor called me down in Ohio, and he'd asked me, he's making some decisions about building a new church building. He said, Brother Owens, please come. Show me where to put the building and how to build it and where the parking lots and what I should do. And Brother Young is a pilot, and I said, Doc, I've got to get down there and get back all in one day. I don't have time in my schedule to take a 2 or 3 day trip. So Brother Young and I got in his plane, and he flew me down to Dayton, and we landed, and it took us about 2 hours to get there, 2.5, 3 hours to get there. I spent 2 hours with the man, and then we got back in the plane and we flew right back so I could get back here to the church to work. And on the way, I did something, and I told Brother Young about some dumb mistake that I'd made. And this is what he said. He said, Preacher, I appreciate that. He said, to be quite honest with you, sometimes we look at you and we just wonder, does he make mistakes? He said, I'm so glad to see your humanity because it gives me hope. It makes me believe that maybe if you make mistakes, I can make mistakes and God will use me too. Folks, our mistakes are not all about us. It's all about Him. It's all about Him. The reason why some of you are letting your mistakes and your errors get you down is because your life's all about you. It's all about you. You're self-centered. Listen to me. If you've made a mistake, it's all about Him. Now you get over it, and you get on and go do something for Him. He didn't intend for you to sit there in that self-pity and whine and cry about it and feel sorry for yourself. Get up and go do something for Him. It's not about you. It's about Him. It's not about exaltation of you. It's not about you being perfect. It's not even about you succeeding. It's about Him. It's about Him being perfect. It's about His will. It's about us taking our human frailty and making something out of it to exalt Him. Let me go on. I realize that not everybody forgives like God does. If I fail, there's somebody that's not going to forgive me. There's coming a day in this church, God help me, I hope it never happens, I'll make a major blunder. I watch it. I'm careful. I beg for the wisdom of God every day. I don't want to hurt this church. I don't want to hurt one person. But I'm human. And if the norm happens, I'm going to make some dumb mistake because of my humanity. And when that happens, I think I'm going to realize right now, there'll be some people that'll never forgive me. Now, some people will be spiritual enough to forgive. But others, they're too small. They're not spiritual enough to forgive. There are some of you, somebody made a mistake in your past. You're not big enough to forgive. Some of you need to grow up and learn to forgive. It's ruining you. You're not doing anybody any good. Tell me, what good does it do for you to hold that grudge? What good is it doing anybody? So this is what I do. The way I survive failure is I realize spiritual people forgive. Weak people don't. But I got to keep on going even if the weak people won't forgive like God does. Hey, I determine that when I fail, I'm going to take my failures and I'm going to try to turn them into my strengths. When I see there's a weak spot in my life, I go to work on that. And that weak spot, I am determined before I die to make that my strength. I'm not going to submit to failure. Hey, I may fall 20 times in a given area, but Jeff Owens is planning to have 21 get-ups. If I got 20 falls, I'm going to have 21 get-ups. I plan to be standing when the Lord comes back. I plan to figure out a way to finally get on my feet, and the last bout, he may knock me down, but when the bell rings, baby, I'm going to be standing. I'll get up, I'll figure out a way, but I do not plan to let my failures be the last thing on my record. I plan to have a get up with the failure right before it. I consider an area of failure as a challenge from Satan. I think Satan comes and he punches me. He said, I got you in your weakness. I say, all right, I'm going to strengthen that weakness. Hey, I got you again. Hit you in that weakness. Before long, I'm going to learn to get my guard up. And he's going to learn he's going to have to hit me somewhere else. But I'm not going to be sucker punched forever. What Satan thought that he would use to destroy me, I plan to use it to destroy his influence in my life. I'm going to tell you something. People don't believe this, but it's true. I'm going to tell you the truth. My biggest weakness is my character. My biggest weakness is my character. Now, I've written 3 books about the subject of character. When I was growing up, my mom had a hard time getting me to finish what I started. When I grew up, something got hard. I wanted to quit. When I grew up, I didn't care if I was on time for anything. You know what I did, Brother Smith? About a 16-year-old boy, and I decided I've had it with this. I'm not going to live the rest of my life like this. I'm tired of having my mama ride on me all the time. I'm tired of failing at things. I'm tired of not finishing things. I have decided it is not going to end up this way. Part of the writing of my books on character was the strengthening of my own personal weakness. Now, don't you use that weakness as a way to escape reality the rest of your life. Well, I've just got this weakness. Well, then do something about it. Don't use it as an excuse. Well, I'm just shy. That's why I can't go soul winning. Then get unshy and go soul winning. I'm afraid to talk to people. Well, then stop being afraid to talk to people. Don't you let your weakness run you away from success in your life. Use your weakness and turn it into a strength. The devil likes to destroy you with that. When I first started preaching, I was so serious. I was serious about it. To the extreme of, man, I preached at 50 miles an hour. I quoted scriptures so fast you couldn't keep up with it. And I mean, you think I'm tough now. I'm a pussycat. I'm a wimp. Because I used to be a tough preacher. I wouldn't put any humor in my preaching. Now, it's all just a big joke. No. Here's how I thought. It's the Bible. Right there. Live it. Like it or lump it. That's how I preached all the time. I never smiled. I never had a good time. And it was okay because it was the truth. Man, I could back you up against the wall with truth so fast you couldn't breathe. You'd just be going, can't take it. I had to learn something. I had to learn you got to take a breath every once in a while or you die. You know, most people say, you know, Brother Owens, you can preach truth in such a way it is relatively enjoyable. I had to work at that. Boy, did I have to work at that. I had to learn to give the truth and make you laugh so you could relax and kind of apply it to your life, and then give another truth and then make you relax and let you see, I'm not your enemy, I'm your friend. We're all on the same team. It used to be, you're the enemy. You say, I still feel that way, Brother Owens. I'm improving. Listen, a just man falls 7 times and riseth up again. For every fall down, you need a get up. Let me repeat myself and I'm finished. To me, a failure is another lesson that I've learned on how not to succeed. To me, life is a series of failures that lead to an eventual success. To me, to deal with failure, I realize that what has already occurred, I can't change it. So I will not waste my life crying over the spilled milk. To me, to deal with my failures, I learn a lesson from my failure, then I decide not to fail in that particular area again. To me, I let my failures remind me of how desperately I need God, how great He is, and how low I am. To me, the minute I failed, I try to go find something at which I can succeed so I don't waste my life and get myself depressed about my failure. I go succeed at something for God. My failures, I ask God to forgive me. Then I accept His forgiveness and go on. I teach people using my failures as a tool. I realize that not everybody forgives like God forgives, but I can't let non-forgiving people stop me from going on and doing something for God. And then I determine that that which I fail at will become a strength and will not remain a weakness the rest of my life. This is just how I have applied the verse, "A just man falleth 7 times and then riseth up again." You need to get up for every fall down. And if you end up with a get up, you're not really a failure at all. Let's bow our heads and close our eyes, every head bowed and every eye closed.